It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This is the week Congress switches from the broad brush to the fine point on taxes. I'm David Brancaccio in New York, decoding the tax code. The powerful chair of the House Ways and Means Committee is promising details on Wednesday of the House bill to overhaul who pays what in taxes in America. How many tax brackets? Will state and local taxes remain deductible? Will Republicans propose a switch in the retirement savings system to save taxes now to save taxes later? Another big piece will be how U.S. corporations are taxed on overseas earnings. And it's not just companies. There may be changes to the strange system we use now to tax people who live abroad, Marketplace's Jed Kim explains.
First of all, there's the double taxing, which Kent Hughes of the Woodrow Wilson Center says is pretty unique to the U.S.
Most countries have what they call a territorial system. So if you earn money in the U.S., you're taxed here. If you earn money in France, you're taxed there. And that's the end of the story. But for us, it is different.
U.S. citizens must pay income taxes in their country of residence and back here in the States. The U.S. government does that to keep people from hiding earnings by moving overseas. Expats' incomes are somewhat protected. For instance, all Americans working abroad can keep their first $100,000 income tax-free. And there are credits for taxes paid overseas. But figuring all that out can be problematic in itself. And God help you if you get it wrong. Lillian Fallhaber teaches law at Georgetown.
The expats have been arguing that the citizenship taxation is subjecting them to penalties and reporting burdens, even though they may never have been in the United States since childhood.
Whether lawmakers focus on changing how much overall is due or on reporting requirements will be negotiated in coming weeks. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
Let's check the markets here. The 100 share index, the FTSE index in London, is down 13 points, about 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down by 0.2% in the case of the S&P and Dow futures. A benchmark for interest rates, the 10-year Treasury yield, down this morning, 2.4%, thereabouts. The Obamacare health exchanges still up and running, and on Wednesday, the short season begins where people can choose a new health insurance plan for the coming year. Open enrollment starts November 1st, but many might not know that because the Trump administration has drastically cut the budget for advertising and outreach. That could lead to a drop in enrollment on the exchanges. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Want to know what happens when you cut ad spending for Obamacare? Just ask Kentucky. When the health insurance exchanges there first went online, the state ran lots of ads like this.
If you think you can't afford to be insured, think again.
But a year later, Kentucky elected a Republican governor who quickly cut the ad budget. Erica Franklin Fowler is co-director of the Wesleyan Media Project. She studied how the drop in advertising affected the Kentucky exchange. She says there were
450,000 fewer page views per week on the website.
Enrollment on the Kentucky exchange fell from around 106,000 people in 2015 to about 81,000 this year. Franklin Fowler says healthy people need a reminder to sign up for insurance.
That is where advertising can be especially helpful in encouraging those people to go and get insurance.
The Trump administration is slashing national advertising by 90%, plus the enrollment window has been cut to just 45 days. Joshua Peck is co-founder of the nonprofit Get America Covered. He says all the talk of repealing Obamacare is causing confusion.
Our polling showed that 59% of consumers were either didn't think that the marketplace would exist next year or weren't sure.
And if you don't even think Obamacare will be around next year, you're not going to enroll. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Novartis, the Swiss pharma giant, today announced a nearly $4 billion deal to buy Advance Accelerator Applications. This AAA company does nuclear medicine, radioactive preparations to treat tumors, among other things. All right, here's the screenplay. The Great Escape, Thousands Swim to Liberation, Dunkirk, the sequel. No, I'm talking fish. In August, 150,000 salmon broke out of their fish farms and out into the open waters of the Puget Sound. Now critics of the industry are renewing their calls to end aquaculture in Washington state waters. Eilish O'Neill reports from Seattle.
The Hope Island Fish Farm floats in a sheltered bay of Washington state's Puget Sound. Giant rectangular nets hold thousands of fish, though it's difficult to see them till they jump.
This site's very brackish water. Sometimes it's hard to see the fish inside here.
Tom Glaspie is the site manager. Opponents of farms like these say it's risky to grow Atlantic salmon in Pacific waters. They say escaped salmon could compete with native fish for food and habitat. The researchers differ on whether or not that's possible. And critics add fish farms can pollute the water with their waste and spread antibiotic resistance and viruses. That's why Kurt Beardsley of the Wild Fish Conservancy is working with some state legislators to try to outlaw fish farms in Puget Sound. His goal is to bring fish farms into tanks on land. That way, he says,
no parasites, no viruses go into public water. There are no escapes.
Nell Hall says that's not realistic. She's a spokesperson for Cook Aquaculture, the Canada-based company that owns all 8 of Washington's open water fish farms.
The amount of land that would be required if we were to take all our commercial production out of the ocean onto land is just not feasible.
But there's another option if Washington decides to outlaw fish farming in state waters, heading 3 miles offshore into federal waters. Mike Rust is a scientist for the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He studies aquaculture. He says farming fish in the deep ocean would diffuse any environmental effects.
It's hard to even conceive of an impact.
Fish farming isn't going away. The World Bank predicts that by 2030, 3/5 of the fish the world consumes will come from aquaculture. Here's Nell Hulse with Cook Aquaculture again.
We are going to farm. We have to.
But for now, Washington's Governor Jay Inslee has issued a moratorium on new fish farm permits. In Seattle, I'm Alicia O'Neill for Marketplace.
And the White House this week is expected to announce who will get the most powerful financial policy decision in the country, who chairs the Federal Reserve. Think about it. Is there any woman, man, or child in this country not affected directly or indirectly by interest rates? If you miss our coverage on the air, it's accumulating in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed or at our homepage. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.